Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Given the time constraints and the fact that if the Court rules for Nova on indefiniteness, it needn't reach the other issues in the case, I'm going to focus on indefiniteness and leave the other issues to the briefs.
Could I understand the difference between the cases? As I understand it, in this case, you're challenging the supplemental damages, that this has nothing to do with the original judgment.
That's correct.
That's right. So in the second case, you're challenging the original judgment.
That's correct.
Right.
Dow argues that the Supreme Court in Nautilus made no change in the law justifying a departure from what I call Dow 1, the earlier panel decision, since Dow 1 doesn't use the magic words insolubly ambiguous and amenable to construction. But the fact is that the Dow 1 did use other phrases which were rejected by the Supreme Court in Nautilus, and one of them was no narrowing construction, and one of them was the equivalence of if some meaning can be gleaned from the claims. When the Court held that whether the meaning of the claim is discernible, even though the task is formidable and the conclusion is one over which reasonable persons will disagree.
I appreciate what you're going to say, but let me just ask you, there was extensive reliance on the expert testimony in the first case. That's still permissible, is it not, under Nautilus? Or is there some distinction with regard to the nature
of it? It is permissible, Your Honor. But the focus is on the spec in the prosecution history. The Nautilus One remand says that, and the Supreme Court says that. But you still have to look at the spec and the prosecution history.
Well, what about the temporal aspect of it? For example, Nautilus, the Supreme Court's opinion in Nautilus does speak to experts, but it also says repeatedly at the time of the invention, at the time of the application. So it brings you back to that. Is that a notable distinction that's applicable to this case?
You have to look at the time of the application. But I would direct you to one quote which I have. It's a Supreme Court case, Brook Group versus Brown and Williamson, and it says, when an expert opinion is not supported by sufficient facts to validate it in the eyes of the law, or when indisputable record facts contradict or otherwise render the opinion unreasonable, it cannot support a jury's verdict. And I submit that's exactly the case here, and I will cut to the quick, because there are two pieces of evidence that were not considered in Dow 1, and one of them is really critical, and that is a co-pending application which issues it as a patent, a 398 patent. It's in the appendix, and Blue 14, the blue brief, on page 14.
The blue brief in this case?
In this case.
Okay.
Has a picture of a figure 2 in that case, which is really critical to this case. And I ask the Court's indulgence. I will note that the 398 patent is related to the patents in suit in this respect. It has a disclosure, the slope of strain hardening, which is not identical, but substantially parallel to the same disclosure in the patents in suit. The patents in suit were clearly used as a template to prepare it when you compare the two. And moreover, it originally was recited as claiming priority of one of the patents in suit, and all of them had a grandfather or great-grandfather application in common. That was removed, but nevertheless, it is clearly a related patent. And the case law basically says you can look, this Court's case law, you can look at subsequently issued patents that are related and are directed.
Yeah, well, that may be true, but isn't that a little, aren't you kind of picking an argument that's kind of difficult? Because, I understand the arguments about how the change in Nautilus and the change in law, but if your point is that there was stuff that we didn't consider in our earlier opinion that should be considered now, that raises all kinds of questions about waiver and so forth. That it seems to me that's a harder road for you to travel on if you're just saying, well, this case, leave aside change in law, etc. There was a fact out there or information or an argument out there, and the Court ignored it, and that's why they were wrong.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that because the Court ignored it, somehow that changes everything. All I'm saying is we relied on this in our briefs, And the court didn't mention it. And when I explain it, I think you'll see it's very critical.
Well, I thought you were saying that under the new standard, stuff that before seemed not to be so relevant now is relevant and shows indefiniteness.
I could not have said it better. I agree with you, Your Honor. And the point is, here, Dr. Shao said that the slope is the maximum slope, and the decision was based on his opinion. He admitted that there's not a piece of prior art supporting maximum slope. He admitted that the Dow 4 constructs, all of which were different slopes, were not the maximum slope. He admitted that the only thing the jury had to rely on was his ipsa dixit, his say-so. And when you look at 398, the 398 patent, I hope you will agree that this shows that he was clearly wrong. Because what it shows is, it's got the figure that was missing from the patents in suit. There was a figure one, Your Honor will remember, that there was figure one, and for some reason it was not included. But this patent has a disclosure which parallels the key disclosure in the patents in suit, and this picture is the figure which I suggest probably looks pretty much like the figure one that was missing. And what it shows, whether it does or not, it is highly relevant because it shows you a strain hardening curve. And it shows you the strain hardening curve is not a point which the Dow 1 seemed to suggest, that the strain hardening curve is a single point. It's not a straight line, it's a curve. And it suggests that the curve, the slope of strain hardening is not the maximum slope, it's the 10% secant tangent slope. That is one of the four slopes that GE used internally, and while the court said in its earlier opinion that there's no evidence that they were using the same invention or the same claim or whatever it was, the fact is it shows you there are four choices and probably more. This one shows the choice is not the maximum slope, it's the 10% secant slope.
But with regard to that point, maybe, I think it's the same one. I think the opinion earlier said, okay, there are four choices, but that's okay because it's almost like an enablement question that one could, if there's a limited amount of choices, I think the opinion said, then that's sort of acceptable. We said claims are not indefinite even if some experimentation is required to determine the exact scope of the claim. Is that the law in that regard, assuming the panel was correct in its statement of the law as it stood then, is that aspect of the law changed under Nautilus?
Yes, there has to be reasonable certainty, and let me give you an example. In the prosecution history of the patents in suit, they distinguished a reference, and they distinguished it on the basis of using a slope other than, they used the maximum slope, they used the slope other than the maximum slope. And the end result was, in that case, they didn't infringe. Had they used the maximum slope, they would have infringed. So my point is, Nova and everybody else in the country needs to know with reasonable certainty when they take acts, are they likely to infringe or not likely to infringe? If there are multiple choices, if all the evidence shows that the choice would not have been the maximum slope, but some other slope, whether it's two choices, three choices, or four choices, the fact is that's not reasonable certainty. It may have been proper under the prior Exxon test, but which is where all these earlier quotes come from. But it is not proper under a reasonable certainty test, and I submit that when you've got an expert witness who admits he has nothing supporting him, who says, you just have to take my word, and all of the evidence in the record is contrary to what he says, that is anything but reasonable certainty. And I submit that that does not satisfy the Supreme Court's guidelines in Nautilus.
Now, do you want to spend a minute on your friend's argument that we shouldn't even be repeating this analysis at this juncture of the case?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
The argument that the other side makes is that this issue isn't properly before us for revisiting at this juncture in the case. The question of indefinite.
Absolutely. They make multiple arguments. One is they questioned jurisdiction. They said that this is an interlocutory appeal under 54B, and it's improper to consider it. This is an intervening change in the law, and the intervening change of the law, the rule is Fresenius governs this rule. The case has to be entirely concluded for it to be foreclosed from finality.
I don't think that's the right test. I mean, I think it's law of the case. And they're, in this proceeding on supplemental damages, they're saying that the indefiniteness ruling in the earlier proceeding is the law of the case.
The law of the case.
And the question is whether law of the case permits you to re-examine the question when there's intervening Supreme Court authority.
Your Honor, there's an intervening law exception to law of the case. We cite the cases on Yellow 25 and 26, and the law of the case does not apply to an intervening law. They said we should have raised this in the case below. Nautilus was decided by the Supreme Court after the decision on supplemental damages. We couldn't raise it before. There's an intervening law exception to law of the case, and Fresenius was an interlocutory, the prior case was an interlocutory appeal. It's not under 54B, it was under 1292C2, which is final except for an accounting in a patent case. So all I'm saying is, their arguments that this court should not consider this issue, in my humble opinion, are clearly wrong and inconsistent with all the case law that I know of.
Mr. Turner, let me just ask you some cleanup questions. For example, Dow claims that its expert, Soros, who you were discussing a few minutes ago, didn't testify that the separation component B from the whole product was, quote, clean, close quote. Where in the record does he say it was clean?
Your Honor, is that the next appeal? I think that's the next appeal. Can I save my answer
okay.
for the next
yeah.
appeal? I never give an answer like that, but I've never been involved in two appeals, one
All
after
right.
the other.
All right, I'm mixing questions here.
Soares is the expert in the other case.
Okay.
Shao is the expert in this case.
Right.
I apologize.
I apologize.
So, let me talk, if there are no more questions on the slope issue, I'd like to talk a little about the SHC coefficient unit, what unit is...
You're in your rebuttal time, though, so you might want to make it clear.
I'll save it.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Let me, if I can, just briefly start by addressing some of these finality questions.
Well, actually, let me ask you a different question,
sure.
Okay? And Paige, your expert, Mr. Shao, testified with respect to indefinite. He said that a person of ordinary skill in the art would know to take this measurement at the maximum slope.
He did.
And you recognize on page 45 of your red brief that there are at least three different methods of doing that measurement. The final slope method, the 10% secant tangent method, which I take it as the same as the method in the 398 patent, and the most linear method. And then your expert went on to testify that with respect to these different methods, they yielded different results, at least under some circumstances. Correct?
I think they were all after the maximum slope.
Yeah, measuring the maximum slope under these three different methods produced different results.
I don't think so.
Well, I can show you where he says that.
I didn't think he actually said that. But I think it's...
This is important because the question is if there are three different methods, and he doesn't testify that a Posada would have known how to choose among these three methods.
Well...
And then he provides his own method. That seems to me we're getting into an indefiniteness problem.
Well,
let's just assume for the moment. I can show you where he says
okay.
it. But he says that these methods produce different results than his method. Let's assume that that's the case.
Okay.
that doesn't that create an indefiniteness problem under the new Nautilus test because you have different methods of doing these measurements? As I understand it, perhaps as many as four, and that yield different results. Doesn't that suggest that it's indefinite?
Well, there's a number of questions here, but I'll get to your last thing first. One thing I really want to make clear is that they do say in the brief that we said there were four. That's definitely not true. That's a total misstatement. We did not say four. The one of the four
I'm looking at page 45 of your own brief,
okay,
where you talk about the final slope method, the 10% secant tangent method, and the most linear method.
Yes.
And you think each of these methods is simply a different way of determining maximum slope.
Those are three.
Okay, but it doesn't make any... I would say that his own method is the fourth one. I'm not saying the early slope method is a method of doing this. Okay.
I just want to make the point
that's fine.
That they're wrong in saying the early slope.
Three, four, whatever. There are different ways of doing this that yield different results. And your expert did not say that a Posada would have known how to choose among those three, let's say, three methods, correct?
Well, I think he always said there's only one maximum.
There's only one maximum, but there are three methods of determining the maximum. That's the point. And the three methods of determining the maximum yield different results.
Well, under your assumption, the three methods could, but that might well depend upon a particular curve, in which case one method might be the correct method for that particular curve. You're still trying to find the maximum, and there can only be one maximum.
Well, there can only be one maximum, but there are three different methods of determining the maximum, which when cranked into the equation here, yield different results.
And I think we pointed out in that portion of the brief on pages 46 and 47, how the Posada would actually go about determining the maximum, even in light of those.
Well, but your witness didn't testify that a Posada would have known how to choose among the three or four different methods that are available, right?
Well, I think I would say fundamentally he said yes. You have to find the maximum. Now, if we
that's not the question. The question is, what's the method for finding the maximum? And he recognized that different methods yield different results, and he did not say that a Posada would have known which method to choose. Correct?
Well, I think I would say he always said you find the maximum, and I think that there's only one maximum.
Well, that's true, but you're not addressing my question. My question is, there are three different methods of determining the maximum. And he said that the three different methods yielded different results. Just assume for the moment that I'm correct about that, that there are at least three, maybe four, different methods of determining the maximum and determining what the slope is and the yield different results. If that's correct as a factual matter, if that's in fact what your expert testified to, doesn't that make it indefinite under the Nautilus standard?
Well, if at the time the patent application was filed, and I think a lot of that comes in that because the 398 patent that we're talking about was filed much, much later. But in any event, and the figure here does not represent those methods. But nevertheless, to answer your question, if there were three different methods at the time and there was no way to choose between them, then you might have an issue. But I think that that he was very clear about how, if you look at one of these stress strain curves, anybody skilled in the art would look at that and know there's one maximum.
Well, that's true, but he does not say that the method he used, the regression method he used, would have been chosen among the available different methods for doing this.
Well, I think there are frequently different methods for finding the maximum, the same thing, and I think all these techniques were developed to find, in fact,
that's the problem. They're different methods, they yield different results, and the patent doesn't tell you which one to use.
The patent just tells you to find the maximum. It doesn't tell you any specific method.
That's the problem, yes. I mean, that's what Judge Dyke, I think, is saying. that there were it doesn't tell you which method, and there were clearly alternative methods, and that typically they might yield the same result, but there are instances where they yield different results.
And
so
I
on the first factor, you're right, but on the number of methods and the same result, there is a problem.
I would submit that the way you said it, Your Honor, is correct. In other words, in specific instances, those methods might yield different results. That does not mean that one skilled in the art would not know which of those methods in that particular case was the one that gave you the maximum slope.
Well, where does your expert say that? Someone skilled in the art would have chosen his method? He said he invented his own method. He doesn't say that a Posada would have known what his method was.
No, he's saying that a Posada has to find the maximum slope.
Yes, and you say on page 45 of your brief that there are at least three different methods for doing that. And then when he was asked about the three different methods, he said they yielded different results sometimes.
Let's say there's three different methods, and you measure it, and you get different results. Okay, so
okay.
Then, only one of them is the maximum.
Right. No, you say on page 45 of your brief, that each of these methods is simply a different way of determining the maximum
result. Correct. If one is 1.2, one is 1.3, and one is 1.4, you know the 1.4 is the maximum. So with a particular curve, a method might not be the right method to use. But why do you know it's the right one? Because one of them is going to give you the maximum. So you're going to know it. It's definite. Absolutely.
But that's not what you said in your brief. You said there are three different methods of determining the maximum slope.
Well, I mean, as I say, these stress-strain curves don't all look identical. Some are curved, some are straight.
We're not talking about different curves. We're talking about with respect to a single curve. There are three different methods of determining the maximum.
Well, in a particular case, for example, the 10% secant modulus might not work because one skilled of the art looks at it and it says, in that case, with that 10% secant modulus, it's not going to give me, or I can measure it, but it's not going to be the maximum slope. So that's not the maximum slope.
Where does your expert say this?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think we had this discussion with him.
Where does your expert say this, what you just said? I've read a lot of his testimony. I don't see that in there.
He says it when he says you would know to find the maximum slope.
Yes, but what he doesn't say is that there aren't different methods of doing that, and you concede in your brief that there are different methods of doing that.
But those different, if they're different methods,
am I correct that whatever methods or group of methods are used, there's eventually still only one maximum?
Exactly right. And he testified, why is the slope of strain hardening not always at the end of the curve, for example? Because sometimes the samples have end effects or pre-breaks. So they have many methods that they can use. The point is, as Your Honor mentioned, you're always going to know which one is the maximum. And so it tells you specifically.
I think you're not saying the same thing you said in your brief, but why don't you go on?
Okay. And I think... By the way, I think, Ryan, we pointed to this. This is A2436 in the appendix, and I think this is the portion that we refer to in the brief. It's A2436, the Shao's testimony.
Yeah, 2435 to 36.
But, Your Honor, if I can, and coming to the law of the case issue, I think, first of all, we do have to decide whether the panel decision, applied the wrong law. In fact, I think it's pretty clear.
But if it did, the original decision, if it applied law that was different from Nautilus, we don't apply law of the case to that, right?
I agree. Okay. And I think that's exactly right, because if you look at what the court said there, and I'll just... point out with respect to maximum slope, the court said, okay, that patent tells you that one of ordinary skill in the art would know that the maximum slope of the stress strain curve was the appropriate value. And I, as I said, I'm assuming now that you would always know, no matter what method you used, what the maximum was. And with respect to units, it, of course, said the same thing. And then in the Nautilus remand, the...
Can I ask you, there's some language. I mean, I know you make a point in your brief that the words insolubly ambiguous were not used in the first appeal.
Yes.
That's true. But there's statements there that say claims are not indefinite even if some experimentation is required to determine the exact scope of the claim. It says the test for indefiniteness is not whether the scope of the claim is easier to determine, but whether, quote, and this is quoting Exxon, the meaning of the claim is discernible, even though the test may be formidable and the conclusion may be one over which reasonable persons will disagree. And it cites the page in Exxon, which is also the one this quote in Exxon follows, the reference to insolubly ambiguous. Does what I cited to you remain the right test after the Supreme Court's opinion in Nautilus?
Well, can I answer it this way?
You can do whatever you want, but I'd like you to answer the question like in a yes or no, because that's what I really want to know. I mean, it's a direct question. Are these, the quotes that I ask you in terms of setting out the test, consistent with what the Supreme Court has told us in the Nautilus opinion?
Well, they give a number of examples there.
In your opinion, I think. Yeah, I was reading the quote that we had in our opinion from Exxon. The latter part was the quote from Exxon. The meaning of the claim is discernible, even though the task may be formidable and the conclusion may be one over which reasonable persons will disagree.
Yeah, I think that, I don't think that's the situation you had there. I think that was the background. If I remember, that was the background that was laid out. Kind of getting to the narrowing down.
It's right in the heart. It's not in the background section discussing what the law is. It's right in the heart of the analysis. This is on the unit measurements section, but this is really
okay.
Interspersed with the
But analysis. The actual test the court actually did adopt was because one of skill in the art would understand the bounds of the claims.
Where are you reading from the opinion?
I'm right at 458 appendix of APX 920.
Okay, I'm not finding it exactly.
Let me find it.
It's following the quote I had, actually.
Yeah.
In sum, because one of skill in the art would understand the bounds of the claims, the district court, okay.
So I think, yes, that's absolutely, that's entirely consistent with Nautilus. In fact, that's pretty much the...
Okay, but that quote, that actually, that sentence follows two sentences, the quote that I gave you.
Right.
So, I don't know how...
I guess what I'm saying is, in the beginning, they're kind of explaining how they're narrowing down. They, Your Honor, explain how the test is narrowed down to this one. This is the one that was used. And this is the correct one, and this is the one...
Okay, but it's the quote that I read for you from Exxon, which precedes by two sentences the quote you're relying on. Is that consistent with the Supreme Court's opinion in Nautilus?
You know, the reasonable people will disagree. Take that one. All right. Yeah.
That's kind of an odd answer, given that we're dealing with the whole thing of reasonable certainty or whatever. I mean...
But I think that's one of the ones you read.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, that could be consistent with Nautilus. The reasonable people could disagree. In fact, I think in the Nautilus case, the judges disagreed. Yeah, the Supreme Court didn't hold it was indefinite. I mean, I think reasonable people can disagree. The question is whether one skilled in the art would understand the bounds of the claims. It's, in other words, reasonable
with
people.
With reasonable certainty. We could have,
yes,
this reasonable certainty.
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, your position is even though reasonable people could disagree, there's reasonable certainty?
There could be. Yes. In other words, because if you look at what a person of ordinary skill in the art, the positive would conclude, if he can understand the bounds of the claims.
So you're saying reasonable people is different than reasonable person skilled in the art?
I am. Exactly.
Well, suppose reasonable people skilled in the art could disagree. Is it indefinite then?
I think if you took a lot of different people, sometimes you might get some disagreements.
What's the answer? Is if reasonable people skilled in the art could disagree about it, is it indefinite?
I think the answer is because if one skilled in the art would understand the bounds of the claims, the district court correctly rejected Bova's indefiniteness argument. Yes,
isn't the core of your argument really that a person skilled in the art would understand with reasonable certainty that that what you're looking for is the maximum slope?
That's exactly right.
And however you get to it, whatever way you determine the maximum, whatever comes out as the maximum, if you apply 5 different tests or 10 different tests, that's what you're looking for.
Exactly. And if you...
It's okay to have 5 different tests that reach different results and that it's not indefinite?
I think if you can readily ascertain the maximum, yes.
I mean, readily ascertain. You've got 5 different tests. You've got 10 different tests.
Okay, so you've got 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.8, 1.85. Bingo. 1.85 is the maximum.
But the hypothetical is, let's assume there are 5 different methods for determining the maximum that yield 5 different results, and the patent doesn't tell you which one to use. Does that make it indefinite?
No. And the reason is there's so many different kinds and shapes of these curves.
No. For the single curve, the hypothetical is for a single curve, there are 5 different methods for determining the maximum slope, and each one of them yields a different result. If under that hypothetical, is the claim indefinite?
Well, I would still say no, because there's one that's the maximum.
Right. No, it's different ways of determining the maximum.
Well, but you're going to get results.
You're rejecting my hypothetical. There are 5 different ways of determining the maximum. They yield different results for the same curve.
Okay, first of all...
Is there indefiniteness or not?
I mean, the only way I can answer that, frankly, is to say that those would all yield numbers, and the one that was the maximum number... If you measured all 5 ways, one of them would give you the maximum, and that would be
the
maximum.
You're changing the hypothetical. What I'm saying is there are 5 different ways of determining the maximum, and they yield different results. Is it indefinite?
Well, maybe I should get it this way. If one skilled in the art knew that there were different ways of measuring the maximum for this particular curve,
yeah,
then I submit that what he would do is use those techniques and then select the number that was, in fact, the maximum.
So he has to use all of the techniques?
Well,
there's an indeterminate number of techniques, perhaps.
No, I don't think he would have to, because I think he could look at the specific curve at hand and decide which is the best technique to use to find the maximum. But I don't think that any of the testimony says that for one single curve,
telling us a few minutes ago that you don't know what the maximum is until you employ all of these alternative ways to divide it, and then you look at the numbers and you say, well, we've used 5 methods and we've got 5 different calculations. Clearly, among those 5 answers, one of them is the maximum. Is that what you were telling us before?
That means
you're required, in order to ascertain the maximum, you're required to use multiple techniques?
No. I was trying to respond to Judge Dyke in the sense that if the person skilled in the art has one curve in front of him,
yeah,
and he knows that for this curve there are 5 different methods, that in that specific case, to me that's a very strange hypothetical, but I'm accepting the hypothetical.
Well, I thought that's what you were saying. This case, the reason it's definite is because even if you have 5 different alternatives, and even if they might yield different results, it's okay, because at the end of the day, you use all those methods, you see the results, and you pick the number that's the maximum.
Yes.
I thought that's what you were saying. So you're saying that under this patent, in order to ascertain what the maximum is, you have to do all of this and then compare the results, and you can get to the maximum.
Well,
I'm just trying to restate what I understand is your position.
I think I would say that For many instances, you would look at the curve and you'd know which technique you would. You wouldn't actually have to go through all the
methods. Did your expert say that? that you look at the curve and then you know which technique to apply?
We didn't really have this in-depth conversation. He wasn't cross-examined on that.
He said, I have a method of regression analysis. This is the method I use to do it. And at the same time, there are different methods that Posadas would use which yield different results. That's a problem.
I mean, like he used a computer method. You could use a hand method. You could use, another kind of computerized graphical method. You could use, it's all kinds of methods you could use. The point is...
And they yield different results for the maximum.
If they do yield different results, then you nevertheless know what the maximum is.
Because you have to do all of the alternative methods and then look at the results and then figure out which is the maximum from those.
I suppose the question is, would a person skilled in the art use those different methods?
And I think in most instances you wouldn't have to, because the curve, if you look at the curve here, figure that's the maximum right there. You're going to find that maximum. I mean, you're going to look at them. In many instances, these curves are not curved in the straight Harding range. They're a straight line. Sometimes they're curved. Sometimes you have end effects that break off. So, for example,
let me try a different hypothetical. So suppose that a patent says you're trying to determine a certain value, and Posada would say there are five different ways of determining that value that yield five different results. Is that patent indefinite?
So we're not talking maximum.
I'm using a different hypothetical to try to get away from what I see as a rather confusing description. There's a value. That is, we're trying to determine X value. The testimony is that Posadas know of five different methods to determine the value, and they yield different results. Is that patent indefinite?
If they know which one to choose, it's not.
But there's no way that Posada would choose one method over the other. There are five different methods that a Posada would use.
If there's no guidance for him as to which one to use, and these are the ones he has, and we're not talking about having a maximum here, then there might be an issue.
So how does he know in this instance which of those methods to use?
The difference between...
With regard to this patent, how does a person skilled in the art know which of the methods to use in the first instance?
Well, in other words, let's say you have a curve like this.
Yeah.
Right. You know, obviously, the maximum's right up here.
Right.
So you use one of the techniques to give you that maximum, like the 10%.
Which one? How do you know which one? I mean, you've got several techniques.
Well, they're all going to be very, very close. And
they're very close, but the other part of this is that I thought you recognized that different tests might well yield different results.
Right.
So in order to know it's the maximum, am I misunderstanding that you have to use all of the alternatives and then see which one is, in fact, yielding the maximum result by comparing the results?
Well, for example, if you have this curve and it broke up here and you had an end effect that gave you an anomaly, then you would not use a technique that measured the effects of the break effects that was the anomaly. You would pick one where you knew that this is the maximum slope of the curve. I've got a couple of different ways. Shall use a computer attempt to do it. You could use a graphical way of doing it. You could put a ruler up there against it. Those are all different methods. But you know that you're going to be finding the maximum. So there's no ambiguity here.
Okay. We've well exceeded your time.
I see I have.
Thank you
so much.
Mr. Dunner, since we would like to keep it even, we'll give you another 5 minutes, and hopefully you won't need that.
Unless you ask me lots of questions, I won't need 5 minutes. I might not even need 1 minute. I've been listening to Mr. Roper, and all what he said about using multiple curves and picking the highest, I've read the record. There's nothing in the record about that. I don't know of any testimony about that. The fact is, Judge Wallach asked, would a person of ordinary skill in the art use these other methods? For sure, because the 398 patent shows the 10% secant tangent approach. That's on blue 14. On blue 13, it shows the four Dow methods internally. People are using other methods, and they're described very differently. I submit that the tests used in Dow 1 do not pass muster under Nautilus. I suggest that Mr. Roper's position is not supported by the record, and I submit the only other thing I would add is that the strain hardening coefficient is a new construct coined by Dow, and one skilled in the art would not know how to deal with that. And I submit this case is hopelessly indefinite, and the court should so find.
Thank you. We thank all counsel in the case.